back Twin Cities. Tom Osman here on KLBB Club 1220 for the next hour here with Tom Hsu running the board and all things technical in there.
Oh, it's so good to be here. I feel like it's been forever.
You're on Radio Marathon. Are you going to do the Sons of Sinatra at 3 o'clock today also?
If I hosted it, it would sound very, very different.
Well,
and that's so good.
One can only imagine. You know, it's great because in our metro area here, between the road construction, the weather, and dignitaries that came to town this week, there's absolutely no roads you could actually drive on. They're fun to look at.
I got onto the road this morning to get here. I was going to cut it, you know, kind of close, and then I find out the entirety of 36 has been shut down.
I also took that route, and I also went on a detour, which I have no idea what they thought the detour was. They kind of forgot to put the rest of the detour signs in.
Oh, that drives me crazy.
But we love MnDOT. Anyone who's listening who's a MnDOT employee. No, we do. It just, you know, between flooding and bridges and the president, there's no roads to drive on. But by the time they're done, it'll be just in time for winter for the ice to go back on them so we can slide through them.
Well, fortunately, we have our personal helicopters provided by the station here, so
that's right, we can get where we need to.
Yeah,
you, me, and Paul Majors. We have a guest today. This is a guest who I've been waiting to have on Flashback Twin Cities for quite a long time. Very honored to have Marcia Floor here in studio live.
Hi, Tom.
Welcome.
I made it. I made it through the roads, over the president, through the woods, going to grandmother's house. Or I am grandmother. I don't know. What are we talking about?
Now, were you dining with Obama this
week? Yes, I was. Okay. I was. I paid my $32,787.27, which is the limit under the Supreme Court.
That you can give. You can give.
That's correct.
Okay.
And it's pocket change. But what the
now?
Heck?
Did he have a fundraiser at Matt's Bar? Did you? Was it like $5,000 a Juicy Lucy? Was that what he did there?
You know, I think in Matt's Bar you just paid your tab and paid your whatever and took a selfie and got out of
there. Well, as someone who's been there recently, it's cash only, so I hope the president and his patron had some cash to be able to pay the tab.
Do you remember when Bush 1 didn't have any cash?
I don't remember that.
He bought something and he had to turn to the Secret Service because he never carried cash. It's like the king. You know, the king doesn't carry cash.
He like hits the judges and like, hey, can I bum,
don't you know
a,
who
yeah,
I
bum
am?
A fiver?
Excuse me, I've got a jewel for my crown. Would you take that?
Well, I remember when President Bush went to Japan. That didn't go very well for a dining experience.
Well, he threw up.
You know, that's, well, that did happen. But we got a great show today. I want to start off some audio, and then I know there's a story that goes with this audio clip because I sent this to you a couple years ago, and you really liked some of the visuals we're going to talk about here. So, Tom, I'm going to play this audio right now. This is from, let's flash back to October 23rd, 1982. What were we all doing? We're watching the Gophers lose, but let's...
Now, Marcia Fleur, meteorologist Dave Dahl, and Larry Burnett with sports. This is Eyewitness News.
Good evening. Plenty of action at the Dome tonight. 20,000 or more screaming Iowans with plenty to scream about. The rest of the packed house urging the Gophers on. Rob Lear, follow the whole game. What can I say? What can you say? They did their best.
Well, there's a lot of people.
That's just
going
to game sometimes, though.
Oh, I was so young.
So this is on tcmedianow.com, and Marcia has this great, great tie. And I believe I sent this to you a few years ago, and you made the comment back to me. That was your Colonel Sanders look that you had going on because this made you look more
masculine,
right.
Yeah, I was told by a female producer, it's a shame that women ever speak to other women because there are worse critics. And when I got my anchor job, she said, of course, we want you to wear a tie at all times. And that was the era of scarves and ties. So I bought this little string bolo and tied it.
Nice.
I tied myself up like a Christmas package. And it didn't take me very long to start showing up in dresses and things that I like to wear. I mean, somebody telling you to wear. Look like a man. Am I going to fool somebody? Short blonde hair. I have things in front of my chest. I am not going to be a man no matter how many ties you put on me.
Just tell everyone to call you Lou.
That's right.
Well, you know, this could have been, you could have taken a three-piece suit route. This was the era of vests were very in at this time. You could have gone that route. That would have been...
I'm wearing a vest, if you notice.
Oh, you are wearing a vest.
In that
clip,
right. I'm wearing a vest and a tie and a shirt buttoned up to my chin. I am so ladylike, I want to spit up.
Well, and there's – so we've had lots of your former colleagues on the show here, you know, females and males who have had this consulting – these consulting conversations. And the women are told, be more feminine, be more masculine, be more of this, be more of that. Mm-hmm. And
I had – when I started my show at CCO with Dave Nimmer Newsday, I was wearing a pair of earrings that were quite small, but they did look like I don't know what you would call them, medallions of some kind. And I was told by the consultant that people would notice my earrings instead of me. Now, there is a piece of advice for you.
Huh.
I thought, I have this strong, charismatic personality that my earrings override.
Those are some earrings.
I know.
Are you mad that you missed out on the powder blue leisure suits?
Tom, I still have the earrings.
let's go back to 1972. You were actually part of a singing group, correct?
Yes, I was.
And you made your way to Minneapolis to do a TV show here at Channel 5.
That's correct.
And someone liked what they saw and they said, we need to have you on more often.
Well, actually, the person who liked what he saw was a floor man. And the floor man had been in a rival singing group. And during a break during this show, I was sitting in the chair and he's behind the camera getting ready to count down. And he said, you know, our newsroom has lost its token woman and I think you'd be really good.
These were token?
That's right.
Okay.
So I thought, well, there's a thought.
So you left the world of showbiz to be on TV news.
Yeah, it didn't go very far, did I?
Oh, I wouldn't say
it's
that.
It's like a walk around the corner.
Well,
I started as a teacher.
Okay.
So it was really almost a natural transition, if there's such a thing, into TV news when you've never done TV.
From Chicago. So you're from Chicago, correct?
Toledo, Ohio.
Oh, Toledo, Ohio. But you went to Northwestern.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. So went to Northwestern, became an educator, and then this – what was the name of your singing group? I had this written down at one point.
We were called the four of us, and my husband and I and another couple – Jimmy Martin, who opened up Ivory's about 15 years ago, and his ex-wife, Dee Martin, who's now Dee Noah, quit our jobs, went on the road. Each family had children, and that was how we got here, because the group fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, show business and nightclubs fell apart.
Right. People were staying home more often.
Sure. I made a list of things I could do for a living, and one of the things I'd seen around the country was TV reviewing.
Mm-hmm.
And both of plays and movies. And so I thought maybe I would try to knock on doors and see if that worked out.
I guess in Marshall Floor, 1972, the year, let's kind of think about in context here. You know, Mary Tyler Moore, I mean, she was the token woman on channel.
On her own show.
On her own show. but women at that point had been subjected to being the Weather Girls, had being, you know, even Today's Show, Barbara Walters was still just a bit player until she became co-host after.
She wrote scripts for 11 years before they ever let her do anything on the air.
Mm-hmm. So you got to do TV reviews for Channel 5.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually that became political reporting, which is a very interesting transition.
Well, you know, I really needed a job. I had taught for 7 years. We'd been on the road for 2.5 years. There's a family. My husband decided to stay in the theater, which pays nothing, and you've got to do a lot of auditioning and establish a reputation, even here in the Twin Cities where there's a lot of professional theater. And I couldn't afford to lose the job. And I could see what was happening at Channel 5, which was they were sampling different things to do to try to interest audiences. I was part of a revolution, and I could see that this was going to go nowhere, that the reviewing was going to come to a dead end. And luckily, I was also a reporter trainee, and I worked 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
That was not easy. And then something dropped in my lap. They sent me to the wrong assignment. They sent me to the convention at the Minneapolis Convention Center of the AFL-CIO, which they thought was going to be nothing. It was Watergate summer, folks.
Oh.
Spiro Agnew shows up. Connally, who headed Democrats for Nixon, showed up. Julie Nixon Eisenhower showed up. I was the only woman in a room full of 5,000 screaming men who were willing to hang Jane Fonda. In fact, they... Georgie Jessel, who was the MC, said if she were here today, we'd hang her, and 5,000 men stood up and cheered. So when I got back from a week of that, and NBC, which was the affiliate for KS at the time, wasn't covering that convention, but it became big news. So all of my reports not only aired on Channel 5, but they aired nationally. When I got back, they said, you're pretty good at this stuff. How would you like Minneapolis City Hall?
And had you been interested in politics prior to that? I mean, had you? What did you teach when you were a teacher?
Well, I was a theater major who taught English.
Okay.
But yes, my family was very political. They weren't involved. My grandfather, I think, was what they called a ward healer. He went around and registered dead people at the polls. But we talked politics every night, and we listened to the radio, and we watched the news. And it was an interesting time, and I was good at it.
So this wasn't something that just kind of, you know, was totally take, you know, a total new thing for you. You knew the characters. You knew the people. You knew the players. You knew what the real, you know, story was behind everything.
To a certain extent, but you've got to remember they started me off in the waiting pool. If they had thrown me into the national scene, I probably would have been pretty savvy. But throws me into City Hall. I'm from Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know City Hall from Lake Minnetonka. I'm still saying Nicolette instead of Nicollet. That was a learning experience unlike any other. And then from there, they sent me to the legislature. And from there, Mondale was nominated, and it became a national issue.
I'm very curious, though, at that convention that you went to where all the 5,000 guys were just kind of going crazy, you were there for a week.
All right.
So what made you keep going back? I mean, that's such an environment that you might have just been scared away. I'm like, this place could kill me.
Nobody scares me. Why would I be scared?
I
was a
answer.
Reporter. I always felt as though I was Lois Lane. I had a shield. Maybe I've got the Superman complex, but you do feel somewhat protected even then.
Yeah, even at that time,
even
though,
at
it was
that time.
Still, the but, odds were not in your favor.
You know, I was raised to believe that women were as good as men. I know that sounds very foolish, but I honestly believed it. And so it was an anomaly to me that they were so anti-woman, and I didn't take it personally.
Now that's
I took
amazing.
It personally in other ways. There were things that happened to me personally that you have to take personally.
Oh, sure.
But nothing like that is ever going to dent me. I have great confidence that I can withstand that kind of bullying.
In the media hierarchy, at this era, there's print journalism, there's radio, there's TV. TV was still even looked upon as kind of the
outlier.
Mm-hmm. And then with TV, let's take male and female roles. I mean, there was, men are reporters. Even in a liberated place like Minnesota, it was a men's playground. And then you bring in not only a TV reporter, but a woman TV reporter. There had to have been, even the most liberated among us in Minnesotans, that had some challenges with that.
I was told I would never anchor because men and women did not want to see a woman delivering the news. They could not take it seriously. So the reporters at that time, they had fired their early morning cut-in anchor. And the reporters were cycling through it. Each reporter on staff was getting a week, except when it got to be my week, it would skip and it would start again. And it would skip and start again. And so I started nagging the news director. And I said, I don't think that's fair. Somebody's going to notice that one of your reporters, I mean, you're now allowing me on the air, is not doing the morning. Said, oh, I'd get fired. I can't do it. It's terrible. Finally, I think he ran out of options because all the guys hated the early morning shift. It just about killed them. They didn't have stomach for it. So they put me on. And he sat shaking in his office the whole time I was on the air that Monday morning. And when I came back down, he was on the phone. He hung up the phone. He looked up and he said, well, Harvard wants you to do it all the time. Now, from doing it never to doing it all the time.
We got this great,
that's first victory.
This great minute to 5 a.m. shift we want you to fill, right?
No, yeah, right.
Tom, let's play some audio here. This is Marcia doing some political reporting at the state legislature, and there's some shocking topics here at the legislature we've never heard before.
Specialist Marcia Fleur is live at the governor's office right now to explain today's, I guess that would qualify as a fight, wouldn't it, Marcia?
Well, not a fight. The beginnings of a fight, perhaps, Stan. The governor says it will be a mix of tax increases, cuts, and delayed payments, which will solve our latest budget crisis. Democrats of both houses agree, but today, House Independent Republicans came in and decided to lay a bargaining chip on the table. They want any budget agreement to include workers' comp reform.
What I'm saying is that workers' comp, in my opinion, has to be a part of the package. Otherwise, there's no reason for people in my caucus to vote for it. They want to do something about economic recovery. And they're not interested in just raising taxes again. The last two times, it's been the same game plan. They come in, they negotiate, and they pass a tax increase. And my caucus is not going to buy in on just more taxes, more taxes, more taxes. They want to do something about the long-term recovery of the state's economy.
Late Saturday, the House rejected a Senate workers' comp plan. IR saying it didn't give enough relief from the high cost of doing business in Minnesota. Some DFLers backing off because the plan reduced benefits to injured workers. Today, Governor Quist said he does not favor tying the budget to workers' comp reform. There is a committee to...
This is not 2013. This is 1982. This is... You can kind of put this video up, just air to the rerun, and I don't think that anything has changed. No, some of the names have changed, but the stories are different.
The stories are the same. The difference is bills eventually got passed then because there were compromises made, and that's how you get it done. I have tremendous respect for most politicians. They don't go there to fill their own pockets. They may eventually, mm-hmm. and they may change their mind when they get there and do what they didn't start out to do. But they really, really work hard, and they do want to do what's best for their constituencies. And most of what is best comes out of compromise. The difference today is nobody's willing to compromise.
No, in fact, you compromise, then you get taken out of primary.
Exactly right. Everything cycles. I'm not going to live long enough to see it cycle back, but I can assure anyone out there listening who's under the age of 50 that things will change.
Our guest today, Marcia Furl. Laura, let's talk a little bit about then the year in 1982. You want to do they want you to do anchoring all the time. You became a weekend anchor at Channel
mm-hmm.
5,
mm-hmm.
and you did that for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And things seemed to be going great, right?
Mm-hmm. I did it till I didn't.
And then one day they said, you're not going to do it anymore.
That's correct.
And it's because they gave you an option to do something you didn't want to do any longer at a... what's the word I'm looking for? Well, they tried to mess with you, we'll put it that way.
Well, they didn't mess with me. I messed with them. Let's put it where it really belongs. You remember the first clip that you played of the weekend anchor?
Yes, I do.
And the weekend sportsman?
Oh, I do. And in fact, I knew the...
And where is he today?
He is actually doing the play-by-play for the WNBA in L.A.
I'm really happy for him because at the time I found out he was making more money than I was. He had been there about a day and a half, and I had been there for 11 years or 12 years. And so I went to my bosses and said, you know, I don't understand this. I think there's been a mistake made. And they said, well, it's market forces. And I said, I beg your pardon. And I said, I think it's discrimination. And they said, we don't do that. And pretty soon I no longer had a weekend show.
So they said market forces, threw paper in your face, and ran out the door.
Well,
there's an article, and we have this on tcbdnow.com, an article Nick Coleman wrote about this during this era.
It was
and
brilliant article.
And no, there's a couple of brilliant articles out there. And when you had made this statement to your bosses at Channel 5, all of a sudden this research all kind of appeared, this research that said that the viewers weren't taking to you, which mm-hmm. wasn't an issue until you had made these comments.
No, because I was also told that research said that nobody doesn't like Sara Lee and nobody doesn't like Marcia Fleur. I actually had a news director say that to me, which is kind of embarrassing. I'm real happy to pass that on. But, research can say anything you want it to. And I was not removed because I complained. I was removed because I wasn't making it. Mm-hmm.
And you were given an option to be a reporter again, but you thought, you know, this is not the way I want to do it. And you...
Well, they weren't giving me much of an option because I saw a lawyer. And the minute
they don't like lawyers.
The minute the lawyer wrote the letter, I was escorted out the door. They don't like lawyers.
No, we've had many people in the chair right there who brought threat-ridden lawyer into that organization and it didn't go well for them.
I hired the biggest Republican law firm in the state. It was the most fun I ever had, and I don't think he ever sent me a bill. I also didn't get anything out of it.
You know, we need to laugh. Let's take a break on Flashback Wednesdays. We'll come back to Marcia Fleur after this break here on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with my guest, Marcia Fleur. We had a good laugh in the break. Had to kind of take a gonna breathe here. Talk a little bit about the crazy days of the 80s and all that happened.
Let's talk about the crazy days of the 70s.
Let's talk about it.
All right. You're welcome, women who are now allowed to wear pants. Reporters. I was sent during this 7 day a week nonsense. I was sent to Stillwater Prison to cover an Indian powwow. Why they thought that was news, I have no idea. But in the early 70s, the only clothing available to women were either pants or skirts so short they were embarrassing. And Hubbard Broadcasting did not allow women to wear pants. And so I wore go-go boots and a very short skirt to Stillwater Prison to cover a powwow. I've never been more embarrassed.
This sounds really dangerous.
It was not dangerous.
Like
it was
a bad idea.
Tom, you're not learning very fast,
it was,
are you? She's not
so
scared.
Embarrassing. And the next day, I put on pants and went to work and stood in the cafeteria line with the real owner, the one we used to call the old man, the guy who founded the station behind me. And he took one look at me and said, "You can't wear pants here." And I said, "Mr. Hubbard, yesterday I went out to Stillwater Prison on an assignment, and I was wearing today's fashion and go-go boots, and I've never been more embarrassed in my life. And either we are allowed to wear pants, or I cannot cover the news." And the next day, the memo came out that women in the Hubbard Broadcasting were allowed to wear pants as long as they weren't blue jeans and as long as they had matching tops or they looked neat.
Do you think? Do you think today that women have the same challenge that they had, or even a part of the same challenge they had 30 years ago?
Part of it, because I think certain prejudices are genetic. they come with the territory.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bigger, I'm stronger, I'm smarter, I can do things faster, I can, you know, I've got the power positions. But the most part, I don't think anybody realizes what we as women in this business in the early 70s had to go through. I was not allowed to go out of town because the photographers were men, and I was told that the wives would get jealous. Stupid stuff. Just kind of, what, men can't control themselves or I can't control myself? You know, which is it? Either way, it's kind of embarrassing.
I mean, you look at you know, places I've worked at and the sexual harassment policies and the corporate policies now, and you look at what, you know, Mad Men's up. Everyone, we were talking about Mad Men. Everyone loves Mad Men. This is it's hilarious to watch this, but it's just what it was. I mean, this era was not that long ago. Up and through kind of before the Nita Hill, Clarence Thomas era, there was not a lot of policy on these kinds of rules or these kinds of.
Am I allowed to say breast?
I think we can say that one. Yeah.
Okay. Then I will tell
Worse
you about my
said.
My first day at KSTP. When I sat down in what they call the reporter's lounge, which was a like on a floor and a half up, and there were desks lined up all over the place. And I sat down at a desk next to J.B. Eckert, whom I adore, and this fellow walked across the room as I was sitting at the typewriter, reached over my shoulder, and grabbed my left breast. And I sort of straightened and looked up at him, and he said, "The woman before you didn't seem to mind." Now, he did that as a joke, and I took it as a joke, but he's lucky I didn't stab him to death.
Is he still in town?
I haven't seen him for a long time. He left the business. But at that time, that was considered good humor, and women better learn to take it, and I knew it.
So the token woman, the first token woman, she didn't mind that, you know, that interaction. But,
I guess.
Okay.
It's just boys being boys.
Boys being boys. Isn't it hanging over
a little bit.
I mean, guys, I was in the
Navy, and their policy on sexual harassment is insane. Like, well, granted, a lot of stuff happens.
They had a few issues with that whole situation, too.
A lot of stuff happens that no one knows about, but it's like if you even say anything that could remotely be taken by anybody as offensive, you could get kicked out of a military job. I can't. Oh, this is so crazy to me.
Well, it's crazy, and yet I suppose it has to tip over the other way. And that's the way anything is done. I was not a bra burner, but I was a feminist. I never marched with the feminists, but I'm very grateful to them. I'm grateful to the suffragettes who went to jail. I mean, you push way too far the other way. And when it comes back, there's usually a balance. And those of us who have half a brain know the difference.
You know, in 12 years at one company in this business, broadcasting, that's a lifetime.
Yes, it is.
12 years, and you have great respect for Stanley Hubbard. And
I do.
You mentioned in a documentary interview that I have on TC Media now that he's a person that you could make an argument to him, and if you made a valid argument to him, he'd respect that.
Absolutely. And his door was always open, and he said that. His door was always open. And there were times when I did march up to his office and walk in and say, Stan, you can't do that. I think I was responsible for one man not becoming news director. Not that I was crazy about the next news director, but this guy had so little respect for women. He used language about women to the other men in the newsroom that was so disrespectful and so evil that 12 years later, I was at another job out of the media, and I got a phone call from this guy apologizing. Hmm. Isn't that bizarre?
Wow. That's a rarity that would ever happen.
It was so strange. It must have been part of a 12-step. That's all I could figure. You got to make amends. And he said, but I always liked and respected you. And I thought, but the things you said were so wrong.
So after Channel 5, you had to fight your non-compete clause in your contract,
right,
to be able to work again. Did you have a couple different offers, or was the next logical space Channel 4?
It was Channel 4, and it was always Channel 4. I'd been talking to Channel 4 for a long time.
They made some offers before, and then they finally found the right opportunity.
They were. I mean, I really felt rescued, and it was very scary because I not working for a year is not something that someone's not making a lot of money. I mean, people have that idea too, that people in the media make a lot of money. Maybe they do today. I've been gone for a long time.
I certainly don't.
No, and what I think it is actually, I think there was a period where the on-air anchors did for a while,
mm-hmm.
but that era's done now too. I think you're going to see the contracts are changing now. We don't have five channels; we have 500 channels.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
The audience is splintered.
Special effects are expensive.
Special effects are expensive. One of my favorite programs. After school was called Newsday.
Newsday.
This was before the stations. And when I lived in Chicago, I couldn't believe how many newscasts they had on in the day. They had one at 11, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. And, you know, here we're used to having 3. Well, 5 o'clock was a big thing to have a new 5 o'clock here. Newsday was taking stories and doing, you know, some in-depth investigation, doing some features. Let's play the theme to Newsday.
From WCCO Television, a new kind of news program, Newsday, with Marcia Fleur and Dave Nimmer.
Good afternoon, everyone. Is St. Paul Police Chief William McCutcheon's reputation so damaged that he should resign?
Well, Marcia, critics have blasted McCutcheon this past year, but today one of these staunch...
What a great program. We had Julie Kramer on the show about 2 months ago, and just she spoke very highly of you, and what a great product this was. This is a great product. Unfortunately, there was this program called Oprah Winfrey that somehow didn't.
Yeah, once they bought Oprah, we were dead. But if you're going to be replaced by anybody, you should be replaced by Oprah Winfrey. It's sort of a point of pride with me. That was a wonderful show. David and I are proud of every single show we ever did. Somebody asked me once, what was it like? And I said, well, it's sort of a cross between Sunday morning and Saturday Night Live. Because we did some pretty crazy stuff, too.
You know what I loved was you can see this all the time now with either comments on blogs, the viewer voicemails. You used to do those were hilarious.
They were so much fun. And my favorite ones were when they decided to cancel our show. They announced it like a month ahead of time. And we played everybody who called in and didn't want us canceled. And to the point where the guy who was the station manager called us all up into his office and said, if you don't stop those phone calls, I'm going to pull the plug now.
It's like, do your worst, right? This is a great moment. I want to play this moment, and we will talk about it after we air the audio. This, you know where we're going with this, okay?
All right, well, yeah.
Here we go.
You did have one more fisherman in the White House in those days, Walter Mondale. I wonder, have you had a chance first to see him or to fish with him lately?
No, I haven't seen Fritz in a long time. I've been trying to call him today, but he's been busy, and I really hate to miss him in Minneapolis, but I'll call him later on.
I wish you'd get a chance to be able to see him,
Mr. President. Well, it would be a pleasure if I could, but too bad.
We thought so, too.
Well, how you doing, man?
Could you autograph this
book? I thought you
were
in school. Well, I don't know. I'll autograph it to John. How you doing?
Good.
I've been trying all day to get home.
I know it. I've been ducking all day.
To set this up, this was a planned reunion between former President Jimmy Carter, who was on his book tour, and former Vice President Walter Mondale, live on the Newsday set.
It was delightful. It was Julie Kramer's idea. She was fearless, absolutely the most fearless person I've ever known.
More than you?
More than anybody I've ever known. She also made some mistakes, and I can tell you a few of them. I mean, when you're fearless, you're bound to fall in a hole once in a while, but she's the only one I know who would have the guts to play a practical joke on the President of the United States. And she called Fritz's office, and Fritz and I know each other a little bit and became friendly during his campaign, and told him to duck Carter all day long. That every time he called, to have the secretary say he was in a meeting, he was out to lunch, he couldn't talk to him, and then have him show up. Now, who ducks a president, for starters? And then who puts them together on a live TV show? I've never seen Carter like that. He was just flummoxed. It was the sweetest interview I've ever seen.
A little startled there when he saw, and the best part, this is actually on tcmedianow.com, you can watch this. You know, Walter Mondale just sits straight down. You know, Jimmy Carter doesn't even look to the left. He's just sitting down there, gets all comfortable, and then hands him a book to sign his book.
Well, Vice President Mondale is, I wish people knew him personally. He is one of the funniest people who ever walked the face of the earth, has a wonderful sense of humor, and likes practical jokes. And this was just delightful for all of us.
And you had known Dave Nimmer a long time and been respected him. That was a great pairing, you two, on that show.
You know, I didn't realize it, but when I got hired at CCO, he was my boss, and I never did realize it. And so he was the assistant news director, and in their setup, he was the one in charge of reporters. And so when he would call me into his office and we would talk, I would just think, well, this is very sweet, and we would sit and talk, and then I would leave. He was my boss. I didn't know this. But he also is the least self-aggrandizing person I've ever known. So when it came to negotiating contracts for this show, I did the negotiating, because he would have said, oh, I get to be on the air, give me a pay cut. And I that's the way he works.
And he said, no, that's just the opposite.
No, the opposite of that. David, hold your ground. After we left, I found out, and they had no right to do this to him, and I thought it was cruel. He did accept less money than me because they told him that there was a money crunch problem, which is not true. You know, buy less makeup, do something else. But it's that kind of, you do it because you can do it. I mean, it just seems kind of mean. And I've always, the only time I'm ever angry with David is when I think of that.
Mm-hmm. It was a great, great product, a great show. And it had been really disheartening to end that the way it did. It was two great years, two great seasons. And to be, even though you're being replaced by what was then the national, you know, hit talk show at the time. But then again, at the time, Oprah was doing some trashy shows at that point.
Right.
And it's cheaper for Channel 4 to put on Oprah than it was for to do Newsday, because you don't have photographers, reporters, and
exactly. We had two young, well, actually three young crack producers, one of whom is now the spokesperson for the Muslims in America. He's Ibrahim Hooper, and Mark Hooper was the executive producer of our show, and then Julie Kramer and two other women, Lori Stern and Kate. I'll come up with it. I'm old.
You know, let's take our last break, Tom, and then we'll come back, and maybe Marshall have some more names we'll have to go through. And let's talk a little bit about the University of Minnesota and the Gorbachev Day, one of my favorite all-time news events in this area. We'll be back on Flashback Twin Cities. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with our guest, Marcia Fleur, formerly of WCCO, KSTP, the University of Minnesota. You were the public relations at the University of Minnesota, correct?
Correct. I was director of university relations, which was public relations, publications, news service, marketing, and storm door company.
Great. We were talking before the show started. One of the biggest moments in Twin Cities media was when Gorbachev was going to come to Minneapolis. And there's all kinds of things that went on. We had billboards with Gorbachev vodka on. There was all kinds of controversial things. It was a communist leader coming to the Twin Cities, but the fact that a Russian president was coming in, the whole town, the whole metro was we were excited. The news stations in town decided to have wall-to-wall coverage. Mm-hmm. Had to beat, it's like Parade Wars. You had to beat every other station, so
sure.
You had to have the camera on the governor's mansion from, like, you know, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. in case Gorbachev happened to roll up and walk out. You were at the University of Minnesota. You were telling
right.
me a great story that you had to – you were going to go meet him, but you were with the KGB officer of communications.
Right. I was with the advance team. Now, the advance team is supposed to get ahead of the parade. And I had two Russian KGB agents in a small car, probably like a compact car. The driver had never been past St. Louis Park in her whole life, and she was supposed to try to get around St. Paul. I was assigned to this car, but the car wasn't given any special credentials to get us ahead of the parade, and we could have been shot on sight. So I walked the entire parade route so that I could clear barricades, and we got up to Grand Avenue, and it was during Grand Day Parade. So I had to sweet-talk some cops into letting the barricades down so that we could cross and go over to the governor's mansion. And it was the coldest day of the year, and it was raining, if you recall.
It was raining.
It was so cold. And I got to the front of the governor's mansion with these snotty KGB agents who'd been smoking up a storm. And I'm standing there, and my Secret Service agent, who was with me, handed me his camera. He slipped it out of his pocket. He said, "I can't take a picture, but you can." So I took the camera, and I held it up to my eyes, and all of a sudden I saw something filling up my screen, and it was Gorbachev. And I dropped the camera, stuck out my hand, and met him. Isn't that great?
Marcia Flores, she is a member of the Broadcast Hall of Fame. There's a picture here, which we're going to talk about. This is, I know it's up here. There it is. Marcia Flores with President Mikhail Gorbachev.
Camera in hand.
This is on the paddockmuseum.org website. That look at your face there. There's some excitement right there. You can tell there's some adrenaline pumping as you got this camera to get this photo. And the Minnesota Daily took this photo, you were telling me.
That's right. They were behind. They were on top of it. I was real proud of them because I was working at the U at the time. They're the student newspaper, and the only people who got that picture was the Minnesota Daily. And not only that, I believe I am the only person in the Twin Cities who wasn't a politician who was photographed with Gorby that day.
Now, is this Vladimir Putin right here in the left here?
Yes, like, it is. Yeah, he was. No, actually, he's taller than Putin.
No, this is a great photo, and this had been just a great coup for you to. There's four stations in town, three stations in town, with every reporter from Shelby's out there, Majors, everyone's out there, and here you sneak in and get that.
You
picture.
Have to be a civilian, honey. You've got to leave journalism in order to get those kind of. I came home. My husband was working at Chanhassen at the time, and I came home, and he knew where I'd been, and he said, "Where did you meet him?" And I said, "How did you know I met him? Was it on TV?" And he said, "No, you always meet everybody. If there's anybody around within 100 miles, you'll meet him."
I can appreciate that. That
he's right.
That persistency helps. And I'm sure you're a person, I'd have a conversation today, is when you want something, fight for it. Do it.
Sure. Do it. And let it happen. You don't even have to fight for it. Sometimes you just look pleasant and people will come toward you. I think part of it is the smile. Mm-hmm. You know, if you smile at people and look accessible, they'll come up to you.
That's
There's
great.
No magic in it.
That's great. You were inducted into the Pep Museum Broadcast Hall of Fame in 2003. Mm-hmm. That had been a great honor. You were among I think, was that the year that was you and Sid Harp and a few others were inducted that year?
I think so, yes.
I was in attendance, so
yes.
that was a great night.
It was a great night. I was wearing one of those great big giant pearl necklaces and really made an interesting entrance. The pearls broke. and they dropped all over the floor. So three tables full of people at the Pavé Hall of Fame were busy retrieving pearls. It was...
So you did the University of Minnesota for how many years?
10.
10 years. That's a long time. And when you left Channel 4, was, again, a situation like, okay, now what? Now what do I do next?
That was scary. I walked out of Channel 4 with a box. I could have stayed. In fact, Nimmer did stay. Mm-hmm. He stayed in order to be vested in the Union Pension Fund, and that's a smart thing to do. But I would never have been – I could have stayed another 3 years and been vested, but I would have been hating my life. Mm-hmm. I thought, this is a good time to step out. It's a good age to step out. I'm way past where most women are still working in television.
And you didn't want to go back to being street reporting, and going back to being morning to night to weekends.
It's exhausting. I was in my 50s. I'm not going to go out there and compete with 25-year-olds. Shoot me. No, just shoot me.
So the University of Minnesota, and this is actually, again, an era where big companies, organizations thought, we need people that do public relations. They have a spokesperson, they have a president, which is now he's not a good spokesperson to go out there and start talking. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised. We've had this conversation on the show many times before. These billionaires who think they're a good public relations agent, they go out there and make some comments, and
that's what makes news, Tom. Don't discourage them. Don't let them hire PR people. The dumber they are, the more reporters get to cover what they do. They fall in it every single time.
And you came into the University of Minnesota not long after the Ken Kellerman, Ken Keller, which was a...
I was hired because of that. I was a reporter covering the demise of President Keller, and he was a wonderful man. I really respect him. But they had done just about everything wrong in a PR sense. And the media was brutal. And they wanted to hire somebody. Well, they finally settled on me because they wanted to hire somebody who understood the media. And I'll tell you, the learning curve with academics is very, very high. They really believe that you can control the news. And there is no way of doing it. There were two things that I promised them I would not do, could not do. I couldn't control the news, that they could, and that I would not be a spokesperson for them. Mm-hmm. They tried to get me to be their spokesperson, and I said, no reporter is going to believe me. This is the President of the United States, where the press secretary can go out there and make a pronouncement. Mm-hmm. They want to hear from the people who are responsible. I will help you say the right thing in the right order, but I will not be your spokesperson.
Right.
That was a shock.
Well, and also the University of Minnesota, we're not talking the colleges, St. Kate's, we're not talking Concordia, we're talking the University of Minnesota, which is one of the biggest
multi-million-dollar industry. Mm-hmm. It is huge. And at any one time, any one of the 80,000 people who work and go there can be doing something really naughty.
I know you're not scared, but I do have to ask. At one point, did you think, wow, okay, I have this whole school that I'm now directing for. Right. Was everyone like, what am I going to do?
No.
Okay.
this is going to sound stupid, and my kids are going to just die when I say this, but how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. It's just a great big elephant, and it usually doesn't come at you all at once. It comes at you one bite at a time, and if it comes at you with more than one bite at a time, you find somebody to take another of the bites. Mm-hmm. And you get people that you trust, and you have this to do and that to do and something else to do. My scariest moment was the first day I was there. Was the day when Nils Husemel was inaugurated. Mm-hmm. My office was in charge of the inauguration. I said to my news director, Pat, I would like you to, and she said, why don't you email me?
Say what?
Uh-huh. And I said, okay. And I walked in my office and sat down and almost cried. I looked at this tiny little Apple computer, and I didn't know what email was, and I didn't know how to operate a computer, and nobody was going to talk to me until I knew how.
So who do you call at that point?
Well, there was an office administrator, okay. And I called her in, and I said, tell me how to work this darn thing.
That's okay. If someone who's taking courses at U of M, they're still professors today. They don't use email. It's okay. It's okay.
It was so scary. That was the most scared I've ever been.
But you did it for 10 years, and then now I don't use the term retired. Are you're retired now? Do you do consulting?
I consulted for a while, and I still am very bossy. And anybody who wants to consult with me can give me a phone call, and I'll be happy to tell them how to live their lives. But I don't. I never put out a shingle. My favorite thing to do, if I'm going to do a commercial for myself, is crisis management. Mm-hmm. I'm very, very good in a crisis. I know what steps to take to minimize the damage. You're not going to change the facts, but you can help yourself.
Has Donald Sterling called you at all?
No, he hasn't, he hasn't asked me. And the minute he opened his mouth, I would have said, shut up.
We've discussed this way too long, and I'm sure we'll move on to another topic at some point. But I thought, why wouldn't someone have a lawyer or someone next to him that hits the cut sign when you're already in quicksand?
They're arrogant. There is a certain amount of arrogance. They think knowing something is knowing everything.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever get frustrated when you're watching these kinds of things unfold? You know, knowing your background, you know, whether it be companies here locally or news events, or like, why are they doing that?
Oh, I'm frustrated all the time, and I run through scenarios, and I have solutions, and I lay them out for myself, and I'm quite pleased.
You could cash in on these, I think.
That's right. I'm very pleased with myself when I figure things out.
Now, your voice is very recognizable. Do you ever go into the store and someone says, "Didn't you used to be the?"
Yeah, it is like, "Didn't you used to be?" And I'm so flattered. I said, "Oh my God, you're a lot older than you look." To remember me? No, I don't.
I'm like, serious?
Who says this?
What? No. I think that these are people who kept me in business. Mm-hmm. These are lovely people. And even when they do dumb things, I had a woman once who came up and pulled my hair because she had a bet with her sister that I wore a wig. And it brought tears to my eyes. It made me feel bad, and it brought tears to my eyes because then you're just objectified. But for the most part, people are respectful and nice.
It's amazing when you're on TV or you're in theater or whatnot. You're not a person. You're someone for us to analyze and to if you're at a restaurant and you can come up there. Hey, we got a bet about this and that. And
I'm a lot nicer person than I would be if I hadn't been a celebrity for a little while.
Huh.
No, because you learn real fast that anything you do, even in the other days when there wasn't all this social media, word gets around very fast when you're disrespectful or say something evil. But even then, in fact, stories used to come back to me. One person said to me, "Oh, I my friend Josie told me that one day you were lost downtown, you needed to ride back to the stage, and you sat on the lap and you told a dirty joke." And I said, "That never happened." "Oh, yes, it did." "I heard it." Whoa.
You know, right now, and can you imagine right now with the digital devices and the tweeting, the Facebooking, and the videos, trying to run a PR for the university with everyone being their own PR firm, everyone tracking what everyone else is doing. The problem with today is you're never going to be able to spin facts as well as you used to be, because everyone is going to get. But then again, you take a video and you can take 10 seconds of it, and then you've altered history.
Yeah, you have. Well, I would frankly like to see every school starting. We ought to be teaching communications, and we ought to be teaching communications because it is so valuable to be able to tell the difference between the lie and the truth, and to be able to research it, and to understand bias, to understand where people are coming from, and to be able to make up your own mind.
You know, communications, when I was in school in the 80s and 90s, it was speech. It was going up and this is what I'm telling you, this is what I'm telling you, and not what I told you.
Yeah.
I asked a professor at St. Thomas recently, I said, how do you now teach communications when every year there's a whole new element to how people are living, especially the young 18 to 22-year-olds.
What's Instagram?
Well, I just signed on that 2 or 3 weeks ago. It's kind of fun.
I was going on my degree in speech communications, it took me till college for someone to say, "Look at who owns who. Follow the bias." That's what's important. It's like history is written by the winners. Try and figure out where these people are getting their money from.
Exactly right. And why are certain things left out of history? Because they didn't have any power, and they never will have. And that's a part of history that may be fascinating, and we would benefit from knowing it, but we're never going to know it because we're not in control.
And Marsha, you've been very humble about when we were talking about our interview today about your, you know, forgotten career, but no, your career is very remembered here, and you can see it on tcmedianow.com. You can see Marsha any day of the week, anytime, anywhere. You can see her with Walter Mondale, Jimmy Carter, covering the legislature in a great commercial with Stan Turner playing football. There's a lot of great video of Marsha on tcmedianow.com. And you're coming back again, I hope.
Oh, I'd love to. This has been so much fun. Is it an hour?
We aren't a three-hour show yet. We might be next year, though.
Flew by.
This is Flashback Twin Cities. We will be back soon on KLBD Club 1220.